The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Tuesday. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing good. Had a great weekend and we got so much to talk about. Our campaign advice to Joe Biden is what they followed. That coming up. The Senate GOP makes it clear that if the House impeaches, they would dispose of it very quickly. We will have a great fake news update here, and it is just a great one. We'll tell you about the World Health Organization that now recognizes burnout as a medical condition. Canada begins a process to ratify the new NAFTA. The EU election votes.
Yeah. Ooh. Right.
A lot of people upset.
Mm.
We'll get to that. New York and Texas airports under investigation by the FAA for banning Chick-fil-A. We'll tell you about the election models that show Trump winning in 2020. Said maybe not the polls, but the election models. And what are they based on? Of course, the economy.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, everything will be based on the economy, which, given the fact that they're clearly moving away from the tariffs at some point, at least, then you know that that's going to boost the economy. That'll likely get us back on track of where we were in 2017 and the first half of 2018, if not more.
Well, it all depends where we go, because Trump talking tough about Japan
mm-hmm.
over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows where it's going to go?
Right. Well,
all of a sudden, it doesn't seem like, because it was, what, 10 days ago. So we have another 10 days mm-hmm. left.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the president said, well, we're going to have a deal with China. You know, it looks like we'll have it. He didn't say we're going to have a deal, but it looks like within 3 weeks that, you know, that's what the indication they were giving, that we'll have a deal with China. I don't see that happening.
I don't know of anything that, and we said this back when we learned that China basically walked away from the table just days before their meeting here in the U.S. I don't know anything that gets them to the table if it includes them changing their laws. If they have to change their laws, that's what they're afraid of. It's going to expose a great number of people in power and how they've been a part of it. And which is also why they didn't want any of this made public, the terms of the agreement. They just wanted a basic outline of it made public and not the details. And the U.S. said, no, we're going to be transparent with the people. And I think that's what made them walk away from it. I don't know what gets them back to the table. You have the story from MSNBC or CNBC, rather, at the end of last week, that the market seems to be, investors, Wall Street, seems to be of the mind that this is going to go on for a while. They use the word, I think, permanent. Or that the tariffs are here to stay, I think is how they phrased it. I think that goes a little bit far, but certainly I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. I don't know that they get a deal done by G20. What would change to get a deal done? And if you lift the tariffs and walk away without enforcing intellectual property rights on China, you've done nothing. You've done nothing. In fact, you've only hurt an economy to keep hurting another part of an economy, because as long as they're able to get away with stealing intellectual property, then they're hurting a different sector. It's not farming. It's a technology sector and other sectors that would suffer long term. And there won't be a getting back to the table with China.
Well, I think one of the indications was when they, because this happened fast, because you and I talked within 10 days of the president talking about how great the steel and aluminum tariffs were.
Mm-hmm.
They removed them.
Mm-hmm.
And we said the president should stop saying that the steel tariffs are great and the aluminum tariffs are great.
Right.
And we got some calls from very, very loyal, more populist Trump supporters, as we've told you before. there isn't one group of people that voted for Donald Trump. You can basically, as we broke it down after the election in 2016, there were basically, there's maybe more now, I'd have to sit down and think about it, but basically there were eight different demographics that voted for Trump that we analyzed back after the 2016 election. One of them is the populist portion that believes in the rhetoric that the president puts out about protectionism, but not the reality of the trade deals that are actually signed.
Mm-hmm.
And we had two callers that fit that definition perfect and were absolutely surprised and blown away.
Yeah,
found out, well, no, that's not what's happening. He's not putting these free trade agreements are about free trade agreements.
Mm-hmm.
He is trying to get them to take down barriers, but he's not putting up barriers to protect American business in these free trade deals. That's not. I mean, he may be using them as leverage. Not sure what the steel and aluminum tariffs were about, except because that wasn't even about leverage, as far as I'm concerned, because he never took them off. Even after Canada and Mexico agreed to it, he didn't take them off until he realized, and this was what we said, this what shows that when Trump says that the tariffs are great, he doesn't believe it, because that's why he pulled them off and then a couple of days later added on the tariffs with China. He's trying to play the game of, okay, I don't want to hurt the economy too much.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time trying to proclaim that it's great for them. We're getting so much money from these companies, and it's just boosting, and nobody's being hurt by it, and it's great for the economy. Well, then why did he pull them off? He pulled them off because he knew that they weren't great for the economy. And he was trying to trade one tariff for another, hoping to limit the economy's exposure to what tariffs can do.
Right. Right.
It's obvious. And people are surprised at that, and when they find out, they're not happy. But I don't see that Trump is losing any of his populist base whatsoever. I'm assuming that, Canada's now starting the ratification process. And I can guarantee you that loyal Trump populist supporters will be out there saying, see, he delivered on the free trade deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's out there and the trade deficit's now going to be less. No, it's not.
No, it's not going to change.
No, that's... And if it does change, it'll just be the organic change that you would see in a normal trade agreement. Nothing Trump put in did it. So, as we said, the whole promise to totally reshape NAFTA, that didn't happen.
Well, Congress has to get it done first. Think about the USMCA, that's going to have to happen on Capitol Hill. And what are the chances of that happening this year?
Well, and one thing we'll bring up coming up here in a little bit, because Canada is starting the process of doing it, there will be pressure on the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
If Canada does it and then Mexico says, okay, look, we've ratified the free trade agreement and it's Democrats that are holding it up, the president can make note of that the Democrat, he can use that and he can pound at any Democrat and say, look, I got this going. But again, it gets back to Trump being a business person himself who does business worldwide. He knows you have to do business worldwide. He knows it.
Mm-hmm.
We still wonder, and we would love to sit down with him. We said the same with Obama. Love to sit down with Obama to find out what he really thinks about how an economy runs. Same thing with the President Trump, because he has had on trade every single opinion. 180 degrees different than the other opinion. He has held every single opinion on trade. And people say it's negotiating process. And then we said, well, what did it come down to? When the trade agreements are finished, are there a lot of tariffs? No. So even though he's held every opinion on it and he has used tariffs, it seems as some type of negotiating tactic. When it comes to the actual agreements, he seems to be more free trader than protectionist, which surprises a lot of his loyal base.
Mm-hmm. Well, then with Europe collectively as our largest customer, then you look at the whole EU thing.
Oh, that was my point. When he said we're going to delay it 6 months, mm-hmm. That was my first indication. When he dropped the tariffs and then he said, okay, we're going to delay it for 6 months, that's when I said he's not going to have a deal in 3 weeks. That's why.
No. There's. I don't. Well, here's the question. Who are you going to deal with? Because if you look at the fact that you have right now, the right is clearly taking hold in terms of the pro-Brexit side in Europe, not just in Britain. I mean, you see the same thing in Italy. I think that you're going to see that same mentality from people across the EU and all of those nations. It will be, all right, wait a minute. If Britain's not in it, we don't want to be in it, and we don't want to. Essentially, what happens is you're tying your economy to everybody else's. Well, if Britain is out of the game, and it's expected that, whoever it is, Boris Johnson or whoever becomes the next prime minister and gets the Brexit deal done, you know, the words were, with or without a divorce deal, we're going to get Brexit done. If that's the case, then those other smaller nations that make up the EU have very little leverage, but also have greater risk because of the fact that their economy is tied to that group that is not as strong without the UK. And so I don't know where it goes, and I don't know how in the world that plays into trade, but the trade representatives, aside from China and USMCA, are going to have a great deal of work to do. So it'll be interesting.
And finally, coming up today, our continuing updates on what is going on at Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
You're ready for me to read the headlines from FoxNews.com. You know we're having fun with this.
Mm-hmm.
Daily Caller started a few years ago, and it was like they would have serious news stories and then something on some woman in a bikini.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, what's going on? And all of a sudden, we notice Fox News is doing the same thing, and we're asked the question, why? Ready for some of the headlines? Here we go. This is on the front page. Avenatti's bad day. Disgraced lawyer to face not one but two arraignments. Horror attack. Japan stabbing attack leaves at least one dead, 19 hurt. High school grads and a dad killed in an ATV crash in a Tennessee adventure park. Mm. Movie star shares photo from time as struggling Game of Thrones actor. Sports Illustrated swimsuit model Camille Kostek heats up in bikini snaps, and topless photo fallout. Iggy Azalea vows charges after apparent leak from steamy GQ photo shoot. Is this Fox News, or are they becoming TMZ?
No, I think that has to be because people are clicking on it. It's working.
Yeah.
The clickbait doesn't work anymore, so you go to this. Yeah, it's everywhere. I see it on most of the major websites now. They have something of that form.
Yeah, you know, they're not advertisements.
I mean,
those are
stories. Those are stories from Fox News.
Right, stories from Fox. I'm just like,
yeah.
What the?
Well, you know, who was it? The UK publications have done that for a long time, and they have a ton of these celebrity stories which are meaningless. They're meaningless. But apparently people clip, so it works.
Coming up, we gave the campaign advice, and Joe Biden's campaign has apparently taken it.
They did the smart thing, exactly what we said they would do.
What is it? We'll tell you coming up next, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Great time in Florida this weekend, though.
Good.
Very, very good time, and it was interesting that everybody seemed to know what was going on, and in a lot of detail, most people knew what was going on with the whole Russian collusion thing.
Mm.
They understood that the Democrats are in deep, 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 deep trouble now. And it was interesting because you and I were talking in our pre-show meeting. I said I found it fascinating from people that are very busy with their daily lives, but the fact is they know. And and again, it's tough for us sometimes to analyze it because we're immersed in it every single day and have been for years. So we continue to be immersed in it, and we just wonder at times, okay, is it getting out to average people out there? people that pay attention, the adults that pay attention every day and at times may be confused because they're getting hit from all different directions. But do they understand what's going on? From talking to quite a few people this weekend, yes, they know. And if they know, then you can understand why the Democrats seem to be extremely frightened at this point, just from the reactions and things that they're saying. I was looking at one Comey, James Comey tweet this past week, and I'm just like, wow.
Yeah, it is more mainstream. The other side of the story, the complete story, is becoming more mainstream. It was inevitable. We said a while back that eventually the truth would come out. It's hard to predict the timeline, but certainly the truth is going to come out. And it makes you wonder what's going to happen in the next few days. Mark Meadows saying at the end of last week that it's not going to be weeks, but days. And we're going to learn things that will make your hair curl. Well, let's go. Let's start. Let's do it. We don't know what that means. Is that the IG report? Is that something coming from the Attorney General? Where is that coming from? What does Mark Meadows believe is going to happen? What is he saying? We cautioned at the end of last week when we were playing that audio and talking about that, that we don't want the right to become the next Adam Schiff brigade of throwing a bunch of stuff out there and it never comes true. And it is either seen as lies or it was hyperbole or it just wasn't accurate to begin with. There's no need to do that.
Don't be them.
Don't be Adam Schiff. So that's, you know, I guess the next part of it. Now, having said that, you can take what Mark Meadows said and put that aside and go back to what the Attorney General said on Capitol Hill a few weeks ago. And that is, at some point in May or June, we're going to see the IG report. That's when he expects it. So the IG report, I think, is going to be a big, big deal. Along with that, the AG being able to now, you know, the president giving him the ability, Barr, the ability to declassify a ton of information related to the summer of 2016 and the investigation on the Trump campaign. That's moving towards something, I think, a huge public information dump by that. That's what it would seem like, because the AG already has clearance to go and investigate whatever there is. Well, why would you want to declassify it? Because you want the public to see it.
It will be interesting if the Attorney General is asked that question. What does it mean for you and your investigations?
Right.
I don't believe he's been asked that question yet, or I haven't seen the reporting that he's been asked that question. Will he say, well, this means I'll release things quicker? Or he might say it means nothing to the investigation.
Right.
We'll release everything. When the reports are in, or we'll release it based on, you know, the legalities at that point.
Well, pair the two together. The IG report being due any time now. The president then giving the AG the ability to declassify information. Does the AG have information on the Horowitz report that says we want to put this out to the people, but we can't do it without declassifying some of this information? And maybe that's what it is. Maybe some of the
that could be.
So we'll see what happens. For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
The threat of severe weather continues in the nation's heartland today, from eastern South Dakota into Minnesota and Wisconsin, clear down to Arkansas. That region also affecting, of course, Missouri, Kansas, portions of Iowa and Nebraska. And with a frontal boundary moving northward, we'll see the risk of severe weather extend up into the Great Lakes region. Rain continues today for Boston, the high 61 with showers. New York City, another day for rain, 85 for the high Thursday. For the nation's capital, thunderstorms and 90 degrees. Atlanta, the heat continues, 94 with sunshine. Chicago, chance of rain today, 71. Dallas, 90 with thunderstorms likely. Throughout the Deep South, we won't see much in the way of other than garden variety showers. For Phoenix, rather mild, 86 and sunny, possibly 100 by Thursday. There's a look at your national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
If they're not off the rails, they're off on a tangent. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I was just going through newsbusters.org. it's where they look at what the liberal media is doing. And I just read this to you just before we went on the air. We burst out laughing. It says, duh, Sharpton confuses presidents Andrew Jackson and Johnson. Twice. And we're laughing at that because when we were talking about impeachment last week, I brought up Andrew Johnson and said...
You said Johnson first.
I said Johnson first, and then as we continued the conversation, I said Andrew Jackson.
Right.
Yeah. And a caller picked it up and just trolled me on it big time. You're embarrassing yourself. So all of a sudden I see Sharpton confuses presidents Jackson and Johnson twice.
Yeah. That's funny.
Oh, man.
That's hilarious.
In other news, this from LMT Online, according to a report, Joe Biden's campaign is now one of limited exposure.
Who said that was going to happen?
Who said that's what he should do?
Mm-hmm. Well, there was no other play, though, because by the time we said it, the observations that were made were based on, all right, look what it took to put the ad together, and then the fact that he kept saying something like, I'm going to be giving a very big speech soon, coming up in weeks. Well, that's indicative of someone who is not going to be in the media's eye, in the media eye or the public eye, on a regular basis, at least for now. And the only thing you can do with Biden right now is exactly what they're doing. It's the only play.
Biden's campaign is now one of limited exposure. Unlike his competitors for the 2020 nomination, he'll actually take most of Memorial Day weekend off, preferring to take time out of the spotlight rather than press the flesh and march in parades, the activities typically required for anyone running for office on a national holiday.
Mm-hmm.
With near universal name recognition and high favorability ratings among Democrats, the former vice president does not need to introduce himself to voters like nearly every other voter. And as a leader in the early polls, he can attract media attention without splashy events. The campaign explained to LMT, instead of holding town hall events in Iowa gymnasiums, Biden is opting for high-dollar fundraisers, no doubt in preparation of a much larger sustained campaign, and under the assumption that there are no close competitors for the Democratic nomination. He's safely ahead of Bernie Sanders, and beyond that, no Democratic contender is even coming close. The rest of the field is at the moment campaigning to be noticed by vice president pickers. The system might work for Biden now, but it has its pros and cons. On one hand, it limits the gaffe-prone Biden from encountering opportunities to speak off the cuff and keeps the 76-year-old Biden from surprising crowds who are looking to spend time with Uncle Joe and Grandpa Joe, as one rival campaign put it. Biden also runs a risk of tanking his own name recognition and insulting voters in places like Iowa, where voters and caucus voters tend to reward what they see as hard work and attention. The difference between Biden and the rest of the field is stark. Since entering the race 4 weeks ago, Biden has held 11 public events, according to his campaign. Former Rep. Beto O'Rourke of Texas held nearly four times that number in the same period. Kirsten Gillibrand, who's lagging in the polls, planned 11 stops in Iowa just over the weekend. Elizabeth Warren, 27 events in 4 weeks. Cory Booker, 27 events scheduled in that same time span. Look, we said it. And I asked this question that once he's out of the media a lot, because really the last time you really saw him was, I think, the last time most people really saw Biden frequently was back in 2012. And that was the debate. And he did look... He did look sharp and attentive in the debate and in the campaigning with Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked the question because we said, look, aesthetics matters. Will he look and act older? You know, that goes back to when he was 70. Everybody gets older. Everybody gets a little slower. And people will notice that.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that we believe that we said, if that's the case, and we had seen a few times when he had talked, and you and I had noticed that in the one speech, he was slurring his words.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, whoa, what's happening, here with him? And, we said at that point, we wouldn't be surprised at all if the campaign made the decision, and we would give that advice. Look, you don't need to be out there. And it's sort of like Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Hillary, it was obvious. The campaign knew that every time that Hillary went out there and she was speaking, she took the chance of decreasing her poll numbers.
And, at that point, Debbie Wasserman Schultz was really in control of what was going on, and there was a clear decision that to keep Hillary away from, the one-on-one. And it would be what? It would be the waving, the smiling. Basically, it would be like right. her being on a parade float. And that's what it turned out to be. That's exactly what it turned right. out to be. And even the debates were, you could see, they were clearly, very measured, making sure that she had the questions ahead of time. After Debbie Wasserman Schultz was gone, Donna Brazile stepped in to make sure she was fully prepared. But the whole idea, think about that. You would ask yourself, why would they want to do that with a Hillary Clinton if it were a given? Why would you want to put the whole thing with Donna Brazile? Why would you want to do that? Well, you're not confident that she's going to be able to perform.
Right.
And keep in mind, this was against Donald Trump. It's not her against Obama like the primary of 2008. Why would you have any concern with her performing against Donald Trump? You think he's an idiot.
Yeah, right. You think about that. The idiot is out there campaigning and speaking to everybody,
right.
and the so-called non-idiots, the smartest people out there,
right.
their campaigns are stating to, by the way, I should put quote.
Right.
Quote, the idiot out there is campaigning everywhere and talking to everyone, and the so-called, quote, smartest candidates out there are ignoring and doing everything they can to not let the public see them and hear what they have to say. Happened with Hillary, starting to happen now with Biden. And remember, this is the fact that Biden's camp, this isn't the general election.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Biden campaign thinking, look, we don't need the guy who is dominant in the polls to be speaking or saying anything to Democrats.
Right. Look, I'm sure they saw it and said, if Creepy Gate only helped him, the best thing you can do is keep him out of the public eye. Limit his exposure. Let all the other stuff, there's a couple of things. There's, Trump can take enough of the exposure. I went to The Hill on Monday, going through some of the show prep stuff. And just like most of the coverage today, at least 7 out of the 10 stories that are posted on any given website involve Trump. And half of those are about what he tweeted, what he said. And a number of those are not accurate. Well,
we'll get to that.
That kind of play right now helps a Biden. Biden is the unicorn. For now, he doesn't have to be real. Because in the polls, it shows that he's the guy. Well, it ain't broke, so don't fix it. And so until they get to the... Here's the question. What do you do on the debate stage? They're going to have 20-some-odd people on a debate stage because they don't want to split it up. They're going to do it over what? What'd they say, over 2 nights?
Yeah.
It's going to take 9 hours. Assuming everyone gets only one question. It's ridiculous. And so, what is Biden going to do in those settings? He's going to have to issue his answer when it's his turn and then I guess go sit down for 8 hours. Because, again, if you let the circus play out, the left has created their own circus in having so many candidates. They're up to almost two dozen candidates right now. But the fact of the matter is that there's only, what, two or three of them that the media is going to focus on, because right. The other ones aren't going to rise. You can throw in Buttigieg along with Bernie and Biden, and, you know, there you have the makeup of your early primary stage in terms of the questions and answers. But for Biden...
But think about this. Do you remember a Republican campaign of a major player running for president where the campaign itself said, we have to keep this person from campaigning?
Aside from Jeb Bush? No. No, I'm just joking.
No, but,
Not even
Jeb Bush.
Yeah, no, no.
That was,
no.
I don't ever
that
remember.
Was a joke.
I don't remember ever seeing a story.
Somebody
could take that as serious. Go,
I know.
Oh, yeah, okay. That was my point.
I kind of had a point. But
no,
I
knew your sarcasm there. I just.
Please clap.
But seriously, I mean, I don't ever remember.
Uh-huh.
Because you will have, when you have Republicans running, they want everybody to know where they stand.
Yeah, they're for the most eager part, to get the word out.
They're eager to get the
That's
word out.
That's the whole
out.
Point. You've got to convince America that you're the guy.
But you
or gal.
Think about it. The last two major candidates on mm-hmm. the Democrat Party, mm-hmm. both campaigns, we need to limit their exposure to the American people.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, it is, you know, it gives credibility, not that you needed anything else to give it credibility, but the whole swamp thing, establishment thing. But frankly, it also gives, oh, here we go, hold on. It gives, I'm not going to say credibility, but it makes a point, certainly, with the AOC crowd. These liberals don't care about Biden, Bernie, they're all right with, because they agree with a lot of what Bernie says, but Biden, Hillary, Feinstein, Pelosi, AOC doesn't need any of them. She doesn't care for any of them and doesn't need to tolerate any of them. So when you think about that, they're probably at some point during the primary going to be, if this continues, going to be screaming that we never hear from Biden. We never see Biden. You know, why is it that people want him to be the president? He needs to get out and promote what he believes in. He needs to debate the other candidates, all that kind of thing. And the calling for him to be, you know, more exposed.
That will be interesting as to when the attack, if and when the attacks ever start from Democrats against Biden.
Right.
Will AOC be out there every day pounding against him? And will that do the op? Will that actually hurt Biden or help Biden?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Because, look, AOC has a limited lifespan, a political lifespan.
Yeah, I think so.
Rhetorical lifespan. I want to make that clear. She has a lip because the things she says are so ridiculous. She said so. She had a tweet the other day, which I just went, you got to be kidding me again. It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, you don't see as many people paying attention to it. Even on social media, when she speaks, it doesn't seem to have as wide ranging of an audience anymore.
I just don't think it. I think it's because once it becomes normal for her to say the things she was saying, then all of a sudden it becomes boring, right? It's like telling the same old joke, doing the same old act, although I don't believe it's an act, over and over again. At some point, you've heard it. And I think people have heard it.
Trump should have had a limited rhetorical lifespan.
You would think by that same line of thinking, yes.
But that's because his opposition just won't let anything go.
And his core values, I think, yes. are there yes. in terms of what he wants to get done. His core agenda is very solid.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Two examples of fake news over the weekend, over the long weekend that just took social media into the stratosphere, and both targeting Trump.
Yeah,
and
right.
And we'll get to that just because it's important to understand why the mainstream media goes crazy and why the leftist politicians go crazy when you say fake news. But every week we have just better examples where they expose themselves to promoting it.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. We'll get to that coming up on the top of the hour.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. Welcome. Good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Hope everybody had a very pleasant Memorial Day weekend. Didn't seem to be as many war movies on.
Yeah, I didn't watch any television, so I didn't. I actually never turned the actual television on. There were a couple of streaming things that I watched for a short time, but I was outside quite a bit doing projects.
Yeah, this is talking about because Friday through Sunday, I don't think I watched a drop of television, which right. is really rare for me. I mean, you know, watching news, seeing what's going on, but just didn't get an opportunity. And then Sunday night got home, and Sunday through all Monday really was around the house doing as much show prep as possible.
Right.
And so the TV was on, so I'm going through the menu saying, okay, are there war movies on? Because normally there are.
Right.
And
right.
and there not that there weren't some, but it just didn't seem the number. I know, was it TNT or TBS last night did played Saving Private Ryan twice.
Okay.
I know that happened.
Right.
And I believe AMC was playing some of the movies, as was Turner Classic Movies. But it just didn't seem like the quantity that I had seen, in the past around Memorial Day.
Right.
So, all in all was a great weekend. Got to see some, great Cole's friends. Hot in Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Florida, so.
Yeah. Yeah, we had the heat going in Texas for sure. I was out all day on Saturday just doing whatever projects. We had a pretty good breeze, so it wasn't that bad. But, if you get to a point where for anybody, you should be taking breaks every 15, 20 minutes at least. And I was taking plenty of breaks. And so I was able to pace myself throughout the day. And I love the heat, actually.
So do I.
You know, I was born in Omaha, Nebraska. On an Air Force base there and off at Air Force Base. And we had this huge hill behind us. And I was born in January. Stayed there until I was four. And as soon as I could walk, my mom said I would run out the door every winter when it would snow. And I wouldn't wait to get dressed. She'd have to go out, run out there and grab me and put all my winter clothes on. So I grew up loving cold weather. Not anymore. I just don't. You're rolling your eyes. You survived the blizzard of 77 in Buffalo, New York, for
yes.
those that don't know. So for me, it was one of those novelty things because we moved to Texas when I was four. My parents are native Texans, both of them, and we came here, and my dad was going over to fight in the Vietnam conflict when I was four. And so he brought us back to Texas for my mom to be close to the family while he was gone. And so I've been here ever since. And I the older I get, the more I just love the warm weather. I can tolerate. It used to be that You know, because they would say, well, with the heat, you can't cool off because there's only a certain amount of clothes you can take off. With the cold, you can bundle up and layer clothes. I still can't get warm on some days, and we're in Texas. We don't get tough winters at all. But the heat, the 100, 108, 110, I can handle. I mean, I know how to. You gotta have the equipment. Number one, ice. Number two, air conditioning. Number three, plenty of water.
Now, this is anecdotal evidence, but the majority of native-born Texans that I meet don't like the heat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you complain about what the what the dominant weather is in your area, right? Isn't that?
Yes, I guess that would be so. But
and I consider myself almost a native Texan because both of my parents are born and raised here, and so for me it was a. It was one of those things where growing up, I mean, the summers, when we were kids, there was a point during the afternoon, especially in South Texas on summer days when, you would come in around 2 or 3 and stay in for a while. Now, you were dying to go back outside because as a kid, you really didn't care.
Right.
You know, you just wanted to go play with your friends and the whole thing. And so, but my mom, during the heat of the summer in August, and especially, she would bring us in. Case in point, the day Elvis died, I remember I was sitting in my dad's chair, and it was really, really hot outside in Texas. And I remember, I think it was Dan Rather, actually, that came on with the news bulletin on TV. I was sitting watching Gilligan's Island reruns or something, you know, and that's what you did. You came in from the heat, and then you would go out later when it cooled off a bit. But I love the heat. Now, sometimes I do curse it. If I have to do something, you're at a wedding or you're somewhere where you're all dressed up and you just, you're sweating profusely.
Oh, yeah. You can't be dressed up and love the heat in Texas. And growing up in Buffalo where I did and, you know, with the winters, I can still remember. This goes back to sometime in the 90s. It's before I moved to Oregon and then moved to Texas a couple of years after that. But I remember it was an August day. And I can't remember what went wrong with my car, but I remember being under my car, maybe it was a flat or something.
Mm.
But I remember thinking to myself, I have never been so hot ever. I'll never be hotter than this.
Mm-hmm.
I knew nothing back then. I mean, I knew nothing. It probably was 88 degrees and a little humid that day.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah.
Like, you know, son, you've seen nothing. You don't know what. I think about that now. I knew nothing about heat. So it was warm, cloudy and some rain though up in the Midwest, and I know in New York, my sister was telling me, you know, they were getting some rain. But speaking of that area of the country and Texas, the Buffalo Niagara International Airport and the San Antonio International Airport are being investigated by the Federal Aviation Administration for alleged religious discrimination after the transport hubs banned Chick-fil-A for the chain's alleged association with anti-LGBTQ sentiments and actions. Federal requirements prohibit airport operators from excluding persons on the basis of religious creed from participating in airport activities that receive or benefit from FAA grant funding. An FAA statement read, quote, "We have no social or political stance," Chick-fil-A said in a statement released to CNN, adding that the company is not participating in the investigation. "We welcome and embrace all people regardless of religion, race, gender, ethnicity, sexual orientation, and gender identity." Delaware North, a private firm responsible for operating the Buffalo Airport's restaurants, had the final say, said New York Assemblyman Sean Ryan, explained to a local CNN affiliate in April. "New York State has strict rules about not engaging in practices of discrimination against the LGBT community," Ryan said. In a statement, Delaware North official Kevin Kelly called the move purely a business decision. Buffalo's decision, sorry for that slur there, Buffalo's decision came on the heels of San Antonio's own ban against a restaurant in March. Well, what happened in Buffalo was the politician came out against it and said, "We don't want it there," and then the company backed off.
Right.
Obviously, yeah, right. The company, Delaware North, was not going to back off until the politicians got involved in it and they felt the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, if because that was the whole point. Chick-fil-A was coming to the Buffalo airport.
Right.
Chick-fil-A was coming to the San Antonio airport.
Mm-hmm.
And then they weren't coming anymore, not based on a decision outside of politics, but the politicians got involved in it. And the companies probably said, well, okay, at least in Buffalo, at least said, well, we don't want to upset the politicians here, so sorry, you can't do it. Now, they would have a legit stance. They might not, though. Could you, as a airport, say, look, we're open 7 days a week. We need our vendors to be open 7 days a week. You can practice your whatever religion you wish, but we need service to our people 7 days a week. Could they make that point? Or would that be a religious point? Or could they say, sorry, your religion does not fit our business model?
I think legally, if they had that policy, they might be able to get away with it.
Yeah, I think they would.
I mean, it's still the reason that Chick-fil-A closes on Sunday is so.
Is a religious reason, right.
That their
right.
workers can go to church and they can be with their families on the day. But it goes back to, there was an employee. If an employee says, I can never work Sunday. Now, if the employer at the hiring process says, we agree with that and we'll always give you Sunday off, and then it changes, the employee may have a case. But if they, let's say 2 years in, come back and say, well, my religion requires me to be off on Sunday or Saturday, then I don't know if they have a case if it was expected from the get-go that that person would be required to work Saturdays and Sundays.
Right. Well, and if you look at the business where Saturdays and Sundays are days of business.
But here would be the question. Was that policy in place at the point that Chick-fil-A, in this case, was giving consideration to going to those airports? If it was not, then there would be...
Well, apparently, no, here's... Well, if they had started from the beginning, the airport, and said that. But
yes.
Once the airport
right.
said Chick-fil-A's coming, it means they didn't care the fact that they were off on Sunday.
Yes, right.
So they couldn't make that. Now, I guess my point was they could have made it if they said in the beginning, look, we're an airport, so we do business 24, you know, not 24/7, but because they don't do business 24/7
right.
At that airport. But they could say, you know, we do business 7 days a week. We need restaurants open 7 days a week. Sorry that we need that here. We're not going to have that valuable space and that demand not met at our airport. If they would have said that in the beginning, but the fact since they allowed Chick-fil-A and the original agreement was, yes, you can come here, they couldn't back off on that now.
Right. And I think they would probably have to demonstrate that that was a very clear policy to begin with, that that applied to any and all restaurants or businesses.
Right.
You know, that said, okay, look, we're going to have, our policy is we'll have as many as whatever, 12 restaurants at each gate or terminal. See, I'm thinking in terms of DFW. I know those airports aren't as big as DFW, but a certain number of restaurants, certain number of magazine shops or whatever it is, you know, the quick in and out shops that sell, you know, the snacks and the drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect them, this is our policy. We expect them to be open because we have so many vacancies or whatever it is.
Right.
Avails, and we're going to fill those avails based on what the traffic is at the airport, and the policy is such that you have to be open 7 days a week. That they likely could get away with legally.
By the way, did you see that DFW is building a sixth terminal?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my.
It is. It's crazy.
Well, on the American schedule for September is the 737 MAX. I saw that over the weekend too.
Yeah,
so they should have the problems
right.
fixed by the end of summer, because apparently
right.
they do. They are back on.
I saw something on
American by
yeah,
September.
I saw something on Friday where they were where it looked like they were working to get everything done. I mean, you know, this is travel season, so They want to get it done certainly as soon as possible, but you would think, especially at those airports, while they didn't have American and Southwest did not have a huge number of those planes in their fleets overall, when you talk about, I mean, think about it, a couple of dozen flights or planes being down in one day for any fleet is a big deal. Now, it's been every day, you know, since they were grounded. So you would think that's likely going to be resolved very soon.
Oh, and then, the American last week, I guess, went after mm-hmm. their mechanics, stating right. that they're engaged in an illegal slowdown. And then one of the labor leaders over the weekend was making it sound like the mechanics would go on strike.
Mm. Wow.
You want a disruption to the airline industry.
Yeah.
If that happened.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I wonder, too, about the story that came out last week about bird strikes being one possible factor, that not the bird strike would bring the plane down, but it would set off the alarm, essentially, to put the plane in that mode that it went into that was not recoverable. And that was one of the theories on the Ethiopian Airlines flight, that it could have been a bird strike. Well, would that be the case with each one of them? And what do other reports show when you had a number of reports of pilots saying they could not pull out of that and they had to fight that plane? Mm-hmm. In fact, that very plane, Ethiopian Airlines plane that crashed, it was a jump seat pilot, actually, just a day before, I believe, or a couple of days before, that pulled it out of that same scenario, effectively.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on trip planning. Drivers often say there are two seasons, winter and construction. Hopefully, you don't have to endure too much of either. Keep your cool when going through construction zones. It's easy to get frustrated. Delays can hinder plans, and letting your frustrations boil over won't help. If you come upon construction, consider the following actions. Pay attention to signs that will indicate abnormal traffic patterns. Keep your distance from the vehicle ahead of you. Slow down and be prepared to stop unexpectedly. Merge safely and early. Don't be the last person to switch lanes. And watch out for workers who work close to the line of traffic. Being impatient can have severe financial consequences. Fines are much higher in construction zones. Give the workers a break. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Yeah, so overnight's going back a couple of hours ago, at least, getting reports of a major tornado hitting in the Dayton, Ohio area.
The Ohio Department of Transportation is asking people to stay out of the area. I-75 north of downtown Dayton, a ton of debris. They posted some pictures on their social media sites. ODOT did. A little bit earlier, and so they're assessing damage in the dark right now, and we'll know more as they get sunlight in the coming hours. Following a couple of the different media sites there in the Dayton area, and one ABC 22 and Fox 45, their combined Twitter page shows a home on Johnsonville, Brookville Road there in the Dayton area. The entire front of this home is ripped off. And so, again, this happened, they say, at least one of the tornadoes for three towns, one of the tornado warnings for three different towns there in that area went off around 12:45 Eastern. So early Monday morning, late Monday evening. Into Tuesday morning, so they will be able to assess the damage here. They're still looking at a great deal of rain and other items of concern in that area. Again, a major tornado, it appears, a very strong tornado, at least, has hit the Dayton area, causing damage. And we'll follow this throughout the morning.
And I-75 north of downtown Dayton, the Ohio Department of Transportation on their Twitter account was tweeting photos of crews using snow plows to clean up the debris.
Yeah, it's incredible. You look at this debris on the side of the road, and it's just piles and piles of debris.
Never stops. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Wow. Our fake news update. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Journalist and New York University professor Ian Bremmer on Monday apologized for fabricating a quote by President Trump. He apologized Monday shortly after Trump condemned it. My tweet yesterday about Trump preferring Kim Jong-un to Biden as a president was meant in jest, he tweeted on Monday morning. The president correctly quoted me as saying it was completely ludicrous statement, he added. I should have been clear. My apologies. The since-deleted tweet claimed Trump had said North Korean leader Kim Jong-un would make a better president than former Vice President Joe Biden. It went viral.
Yes.
You had the Trump haters. You had, I know Ted Lieu posted it, the representative from California, right?
Yes.
Yes. I saw he posted it, the Never Trumper talk show host and viral social media person, Joe Walsh. He posted it. There were people, I think Anna Navarro, also a Never Trumper, posting it all over the place. This is how ridiculous it's gotten. They seem to be outraged every day of something that Trump says, and it's like, people don't, you know, it's like people won't admit it's Donald Trump. It's always been Donald Trump. This is what Donald Trump does. It's always Donald Trump. There's nothing new here. There's nothing shocking anymore that happens to begin with the president anymore. But the fact is, you know, and they're always on everything that he says as if it's the end of the world. And then they're the first to jump on something that's completely and totally false. The liberals just all over it. And you'd be amazed how many have not retracted the tweet. Be amazed at how many people have kept that tweet up and didn't say, okay, it was false. And how many people clearly, by late yesterday afternoon, when hours had gone by, were still on social media saying, can you believe Trump said this? Never said it. Then we get back to the attack last week that the president tweeted a altered video of Nancy Pelosi tripping over her words. NBC came out with a story on Friday saying, no, he didn't. What they have is, in latest attack, Trump tweets edited video of Pelosi tripping over her words.
Right.
Not altered, but edited.
Because it was a basically collage. Highlighted certain moments when, you know, that I guess were in question.
And here's how this story goes. President Donald Trump on Thursday night tweeted out an edited video showing Nancy Pelosi stumbling over her words, escalating the personal attacks he has made against the Democratic House Speaker. The video, apparently from a segment on Fox Business' Lou Dobbs Tonight, features portions of a 20-minute news conference Pelosi held Thursday in a montage that lasts about 30 seconds. It shows her tripping over her words, and at one point in the video, a moment is repeated several times. Trump tweeted the video hours after he called Pelosi crazy and said she is not the same person. She has lost it. Pelosi's press secretary did not return a phone call seeking comment Thursday night. The speaker's daughter, Christine Pelosi, however, offered some choice words for Trump, tweeting Friday morning that the president was having a Trumper tantrum and was spreading a doctored video against the speaker. And this was the whole point, that it was slowed down.
Right.
To make it seem worse, that it was slowed down to 70%. What they found out, though, is it's not true. The tweet by the president comes after the Washington Post published a story about a different video circulating on social media of Pelosi at a Center for American Progress event. That video was slowed down to make it sound like she was slurring her words, the Post reported. In a tweet Thursday reacting to the Post story, Christine Pelosi said Republicans and their conservative allies have been pumping this despicable false meme for years. Hani Farid, a computer science professor and digital forensics expert at the University of California, Berkeley, told the Post that the distorted Center for American Progress video, there is no question that that video has been slowed down to alter the Pelosi's voice. But he said he believed the video Trump tweeted Thursday had not been slowed down. And it was all over social media that Trump had played that video that showed that she was slowed down, and apparently he did not. Unlike the video referred to in the Washington Post article, I don't believe that the video montage was slowed down. This montage, however, is highly deceptive as it compiles in rapid succession relatively small verbal stumbles in an attempt to portray Nancy Pelosi as stumbling through a press conference. Well, everybody knows that it was a collage.
Right.
That you knew.
Yeah, that's because you're not going to put the whole press conference up.
Right. Right. So, but the whole fake news portion of it was Trump was, and again, social media and the left and the never Trumpers, these are Republicans, jumped on that thing and pounded him on it. Mm-hmm. And that ended up not being true either.
Right. Yeah, and it's, again, they really don't care about the truth. It doesn't matter. But I think they've fallen into this, for the far left and some of the never-Trumpers, they've fallen into this, it doesn't matter, the truth doesn't matter, clearly. We don't need to be honest in our descriptive. We don't need to be honest in our attack. We see him as worse. So we can do whatever we want. Nobody's going to call us on it. In fact, we'll be heroes at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one thing about social media is that the trolls are never ending. So if you post something, then you're going to likely get that response fairly quickly. Especially if you've got any kind of profile in the media, you're going to get corrected fairly quickly. Maybe in this case, not by the far left or the never Trumpers, but people will come out and they will tell you where you're wrong. And so that's the one thing I guess you saw on the one story, the whole Bremer thing.
Yeah.
And they don't, but see, they don't care. Even Bremer's so-called apology, or was it something to the effect of, let me see if I can find it. From the Washington Post, by the way. The Washington Post covering this. And here's their, in fact, title, headline, "A Political Scientist Caused Confusion When He Made Up a Trump Quote. The President Noticed." So, in the story, they said, where's the so-called apology? I just had it just a second ago. Bremer initially defended the tweet, writing that he believed it was both obviously ludicrous and, quote, and yet kind of plausible. Well, what is that mentality? Right there, what he's saying is, yeah, but he could have said it.
He could have said it, right.
It's like something he would say, It's like something he would have said or has said in the past. And that's ridiculous. But again, they don't care. They really don't care.
No,
you know, especially on Twitter, he writes, where people automatically support whatever political position they have. That's the point. No, the point is that you want to go on the attack with lies, then you don't care. And, you know, I wonder, and, you know, for the far left, especially, not so much the Never Trumpers, but the far left, do they even care about their credibility? Or do they believe that their credibility comes from that kind of attack? Being an activist, it doesn't matter what the truth is.
I think, because you wonder why somebody posts that, as we have said, you have a party and you have a mindset that's constantly in this, I don't know, this soap opera drama-like rage, mm-hmm. where if they, it's what we have said from the very beginning, if they are in more of a rage than the next person, that it shows that they care more and have a more higher moral ground.
Well,
the more incoherently enraged that they are, the more caring they believe that they are perceived,
yes,
by people that are like-minded.
I hate Trump more. This is exactly what, you know, we said the 2020 election season would be, because that's what it's been since he became president. Bremer ended with a, well, not ended, but later apologized on Monday. My tweet yesterday about Trump preferring Kim Jong-un to Biden as president was meant in jest, he wrote. I should have been clearer. My apologies. No. It's after you got called out.
Right.
When you were getting called out from people who may not necessarily be fans of Trump, that's when you knew you were wrong. And you knew what you were doing.
Well, of course he knew what he was doing. But it's almost as if in that moment of rage, whatever sets them off,
mm-hmm.
and it's really that those that are accusing Trump of being the most unstable seem to be the most unstable themselves. That is always an interesting point, I believe,
mm-hmm.
Because they're the first to just go crazy and then justify it. Well, no. That's not how it works. But I think about this and I say, I think they get themselves into this soap opera drama-like kind of rage that they've been, it just keeps feeding upon itself and feeding upon itself, and it never ends. And there's such a hatred and a rage that they get to the point where their delusion and what they make up in that moment, even the quote, becomes reality in their mind, because he said, well, it was plausible. Mm-hmm. Remember that his first defense.
Yeah.
Well, he might not have said that, but it's plausible that he said that.
Yeah.
So the fact that they come up with something in their mind of something he did not said becomes plausible that they can actually put out there, which is taken as a real news story because it's put into quotes.
Well, you know, even Nancy Pelosi last week during the exchanges, the back and forth. I mean, she's been on a verbal attack on the president. He comes in with a short meeting and then she says he's childish. I'm a grandmother and a mother. I know what childish behavior looks like. So her answer was essentially, I know you are, but what am I? And he's the one being childish. But again, you know, that's to be expected, I think, especially right now with the makeup on Capitol Hill. That's to be expected. And, of course, after BuzzFeed, going back to the beginning of the whole thing with the dossier, that's how they see their journalists. This is how the left sees themselves in the Trump era. This is their job.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. We appreciate your listenership here this morning. Hope you had a great long weekend. Coming up following the top of the hour, we'll get to some of your calls and comments. Plus, we'll talk more about the EU elections.
Yeah,
seems to be the same thing going on throughout the world, does it not? Right now,
I think so. I think
it's happened in the United States.
You know, you look at what happened with Brexit. The genesis of it all. A lot of that was about what being able to control things like immigration,
mm-hmm.
being able to control trade, but having a greater say by the citizens, over what was going on with their country. They didn't want some official that was not elected by them to be making the rules that govern them on a day-to-day basis. And so the question with Theresa May finally making the decision to step down, the problem is because she didn't vote for Brexit, but she comes in as prime minister and says, okay, we'll take middle ground here in this approach. There was no middle ground. Brexit was clearly divided. You're either for it or against it. She was against it. She tried to come up with this. She made this horrible divorce deal, according to local conservatives in the UK, and couldn't come through with it. You can't play the middle on something like Brexit. And that's essentially where she got in trouble. We'll see where the elections go and who the next prime minister will be.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, when we talk about the fake news, and we gave the example out there, two hit jobs on the president over the weekend. The president talked about the fact that we need to change libel laws.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen.
No.
Okay. That's not going to mean the president keeps insisting. You're not going to have the Democrats and Republicans agree to do that. So it's not going to happen. The other thing is when we talk about changing the libel laws, which means, and I guess if you get into the specifics of it, I've never heard the president talk the specifics, so I'm not sure where he's headed, but I'm assuming he would want to head to the point where he is suggesting that we head to the point where public figures are treated the same as private individuals.
Yeah, right.
Well, then it's going to be never-ending lawsuits on both parties all the time.
Well, we're going to need a lot more judges and lawyers.
Get in line.
If
you're going to college to become a lawyer, they would be hoping for that one. And look, I understand it. I understand that there are public figures that are lied about all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference if a paper lies about you, not if they call you a jerk. For example, you can call anybody a jerk because that doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
You can't call somebody a rapist.
Right.
You call somebody a rapist, that's a particular behavior that they're accusing them of. If you accuse them of a behavior that they haven't been involved with, that can do things like destroy their potential earnings in the future, change their status in life because the accusation is so bad and has created a nightmare for them, Richard Jewell, for example, the late
right.
Richard Jewell,
right?
As a private citizen, as he was, then he was able to collect money. The difference is with a public figure, which is anybody. We're public figures, for example, since we have sought the public limelight, and we are going to say a ton of different things, and people are going to say tons of different things against us. Then we have to prove that they have done it with malice, which just isn't, well, I'm doing it because I'm angry at you, but the fact that you can prove that they're out to destroy your life. This is really bad. Well, I'm out to destroy their life, and I'm out to destroy everything about them, and I'm telling such vicious lies. It can't even be the New York Times writing in an editorial something that's completely false about Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole, you know, Phoenix shooting of the Congresswoman Giffords at the time, that was completely, and they did that, what, about a year and a half ago, was it?
Right.
A year and a half, 2 years ago? It was completely, we knew it at that time. Remember, you asked me, we were talking about it, and I said, Eric, I think she may have a libel suit against them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can make the case that it was so well known that the only reason was malice. Well, they apologized, and the judge said, no case here. They apologized, so no big deal. She's
right.
A public figure.
Right.
And it's not going to hurt her earning potential. There is going to be no long-lasting damage to her for putting out that lie that had already been put out before and then discounted many times, you know, before.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I fear is if Republicans push it, Democrats will push it to have government fact-checkers. And government deciding what the truth is. That's the problem that you go down. And we've already seen it now. We've seen it with the fact checkers. The fact checkers now are losing more credibility every day. Nobody pays attention to them. In fact, what happens is Twitter facts check the fact checkers. Actually, the greatest thing that you have is social media if you wish to sort out the lies. And we saw that over the weekend.
Right.
As soon as that thing was written by Ian Bremmer, immediately after it was written, you even had people that didn't like Trump come out and say, look, doesn't matter whether it was plausible. We can't find anywhere where Trump said that. And if you're writing that because you hate Trump, how are you any better than him?
Mm-hmm. By your own standard.
By your own standard, right. By your own standard. If you're taking that standard, how can you dare to say you're better than him if you're doing what you claim he is doing, but you make something that is so, as he wrote, so outlandish, so ridiculous, and then people pick it up and run with it as if it's the truth, and you say, oh, no, I'm just kidding.
Because if it's outlandish, then it's not plausible. You know, this
is exactly right.
And that's
words mean something.
Exactly. Well, because you look at the nature of how the left is often walking something back, how they issue an apology, or anybody, I guess, that is in the public eye that does something like that. And quite often they resist apologizing. Well, it's plausible. Well, of course, it was meant to be in jest. That implies that it should have been obvious. The answer is no. No. If you want to write something as a parody, if you want it to be taken as such, you need to be very clear in writing it. Well, I should have been clearer in writing it. No, you just said a moment ago, it was plausible. Your first attempt at walking it back. And then finally on Monday, he had to correct it. Well, the correction at the end of it really means nothing because it's clear he did it deliberately. He was looking to mislead people, and that's the idea. And they don't care. They really don't care about the truth.
But if you look where it's gone with the fact checkers, you know, you look on Facebook, and the fact checkers on Facebook are mocked incessantly because now they're fact checking the parody websites.
Yes. Right.
This is not true. This is a parody website.
Yeah. Well, and now it is, it, you know, you get to the point of, I mean, the left years ago abandoned the truth. On Capitol Hill inside the Beltway, it's expected. By the way, it's expected, I guess, from both sides. But what became different about this president is that you would make up something ridiculous like this, the whole Bremer tweet thing, the quote, the false quote. You'll make it up again to clearly make the president look like something that he is not. What Bremer will tell you is, no, I'm making him look like something that he is.
Right.
But how many times have the quotes been wrong?
Well, if you want to look at the biggest fake news out there, the biggest fake news item over the last 2.5 years was done in the form of a question.
Right.
How do you fact check a question?
Right.
We're not saying making a statement, but the biggest, and that was, did Trump collude with the Russians to hack the election?
Right.
Now, and that, it was put in that form over and over, thousands of times.
Yes.
In a 2-year period. Now, you do have politicians saying Trump colluded with the Russians, and there is no basis, in fact, for them to be saying it. Swalwell's still saying it this past weekend. Adam Schiff said it for the longest time, that he had the evidence, that he has seen the top secret evidence that Trump colluded with the Russians. Everybody knows Adam Schiff is lying. Even if you're a Democrat, you know Adam Schiff's lying.
Right.
We've all known he was lying. Because we said that Gerald Nadler, hold it, I got the gavel. Gerald Nadler should be calling him in front of the House Judiciary Committee saying, look, you're the guy that says you've got the, why are we going for people that say they don't have anything? Let's go for the guy who says he's got the evidence. Go for the guy with the evidence, Gerald Nadler. It's a member of your own party, Adam Schiff, who said he, up until a month ago, he had the clear evidence. He knows it. He has seen the evidence that Trump colluded with the Russians, yet he won't tell anybody, and he's a Democrat. Why not?
Right.
But if you look at the polling that's been done over the last couple of years, the one thing that the vast majority of Democrats still believe is that the Russians actually hacked into the election machines.
Yes.
Now, I haven't seen a poll in a couple of months, but up to a few months ago, it was still the same. The YouGov, Economist poll, I believe it was, that did three separate polls over the last year and a half. And it remained quite steady. The majority of Democrats believe something that's completely untrue. Completely untrue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was put in the form of a question over and over and over. And that question then became fact. In people's mind, it became fact. In Democrats' mind, it became fact. There was no evidence that led Democrats to believe that. It was just the question being asked over and over again. Well, he must have.
Right.
Well, guess what? He didn't. And guess what? By your own standards, who did? The Hillary campaign.
Yep. And it's still being repeated. I mean, yeah. What was it, a month or month and a half ago, Chuck Todd, that entire part of it was is a conspiracy theory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a conspiracy theory.
Oh,
you're the only one in the major media that I've seen challenge it. Not only challenge it, but others. Okay, let me walk that back. Others have challenged whether or not the dossier at first was believed to be credible or not. He went so much further than that. And we're not talking about at the beginning of 2017. We're not talking about a few months into this. This was just a few weeks ago where he said the whole thing, that whole side of it is a conspiracy theory. What you're saying is that they didn't hire Fusion GPS? That Steele didn't get the dossier from the Russians? Even James Comey said it was bogus information, that it was unverified. But they need you to, because here's the difference. They invested a ton of their own personal energy into making you believe that, just like man-made global warming. When they put that much energy into anything, they can't walk it back. You're married to it.
Let's go to Daniel in Tennessee. Daniel, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. I got two real quick questions. number one, if they don't have the proof of what they're saying, why can't slander charges be brought against each and every one of the media that's telling lies? And number two, with the investigation and all the money that's been spent on the investigation that showed nothing, why can't those people be charged to pay the government back the 30-some millions of dollars that's been spent?
Who pays it back?
The people that, like Hillary Clinton, anybody involved.
Hillary Clinton didn't do the investigation. The Justice Department.
But
then the Trump administration would have to pay back the $30 million because the Trump administration conducted the investigation. So who's the head of the Trump administration would be Trump. Should Trump pay the $30
million? Well, no. What I'm trying to get to is
Daniel, you're talking about reimbursement.
Yes.
Having somebody outside of the government reimburse the people for that money.
Yeah, that was the government decision to spend the money. Nobody's going to reimburse it.
No, it's not going to. It's not going to happen. We understand what you're trying to say here,
right.
But the fact of the matter is you're not going to hold anybody responsible for slander in this case because you're going to. Let's say you got all the media in a line, right? And thank you for the call, but you lined them all up and you brought them through one by one and one. Huge marathon set of court proceedings. They're all going to say the same thing. We had what we felt at the time was credible information. That's it. They don't have to reveal their sources. You can't look into it. The court's not going to look into it.
It's not going to
matter.
Yeah, we answered your first question in the monologue because public figures are treated different than private individuals.
Yep.
It's completely different. If you did it with private individuals, you would have a lawsuit.
Yep.
But as soon as you go into the public arena, you don't have it. I was just kidding with you because you're trying to say when the government decides, the government is responsible for the money that the government spends. And it was the Trump administration through the Justice Department, through the former Deputy Attorney General who got this all going because members of Congress demanded it. But it was the executive branch that Trump is the head of that spent the $30 million.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say, where do you get the $30 million from whom? That's why I asked the question. And I was being sarcastic when I said Trump would pay for it then if you're trying to find who's responsible, because you'd have to find the government official that was the head of that overall branch. Even though Trump didn't authorize it, he still is the head of it.
Right.
So attorney generals and district attorneys don't pay the cost out of their own personal funding if an investigation ends up not bringing charges. The taxpayer still pays for it.
Right. Yep.
So.
And we've paid enough.
That's the way that's the way the system works. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, I want to play an audio cut from Fox News Sunday. Lindsey Graham was on there and said not one single Democrat cares about whether there was abuse of FISA warrant.
Mm, right.
Not one single Democrat cares. And I was listening to that during our pre-show meeting. And I thought about this past weekend. That's the biggest question that I got when we got into discussions. A lot of people want to know, hey, you do this for a living. What's going on here? And they said, what about the FISA warrants? And the point was, as you and I've made many times, liberals used to care about civil liberties.
Right.
You know, they used to care.
Years ago,
they used to care about civil liberties. And think about this, because this when you go back, I'm thinking of the 70s and. You know, the Watergate and the possibility of the Republicans spying on the Democrats and that kind of secret going on was just liberals would not stand for it. And Lindsey Graham said it yesterday. Where are they today? We're talking about the ability of the government to do secret warrants on individuals, which is supposed to be for terrorism.
Right.
We entrust our government to do something that actually, you know, is not supposed to be done to any American citizen under the Constitution. A secret warrant is not supposed to be done, but it's done in just special cases where the nation might be endangered because of terrorism. And now you've got clear questions that 30, 40 years ago, if this was going on, Democrats would be up in arms about this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That we would care about those constitutional violations. And that was the biggest question I got this past weekend from the folks I was with in Florida, a number of them, in the discussions we're having. How come they don't care anymore?
Mm. For the latest on the storms and tornadoes in the Dayton, Ohio area, here's meteorologist John.
A large destructive tornado has struck Dayton, Ohio overnight. They were under a tornado emergency for a time as that severe weather went through, the National Weather Service calling it a life-threatening situation. We'll learn more at first light, but the tornado's path did cross directly over Interstate 75. Social media and ODOT show strewn metal across the highway, some of it sheet metal, which appears to be maybe from the side of the trailer of a semi. After that tornado went through, another one right across almost the same area. Rescue crews are going door to door. There are numerous power outages, so be aware if you're traveling in the area of especially the northern suburbs of Dayton, Ohio. Moving to the south, historic river flooding is likely on the Arkansas River. Flooding will be likely in the Little Rock area. Be prepared for evacuations. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
DPF is cleaned. Their DEF is in the SCR. Their ELDs are up to date, but their CDLs are expired. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary. 866-90-RED-EYE. Want to play this audio cut from Lindsey Graham over the weekend on Fox News Sunday. And Chris Wallace asked him the question about the president giving the attorney general the authority to release declassified information concerning the entire Russian situation. Here was Lindsey Graham's response to this.
No, not at all, from my point of view.
And, of course, my computer has completely gone on me. Trying to get it fixed, folks, but no luck as of yet. What he said was he has no problem with the attorney general doing it,
right?
And
that was the basis of the question from Chris Wallace.
He had no problem with the attorney general doing it. The one thing that he brought up is not one Democrat seems to be concerned with the fact of potential FISA abuse.
No,
that, and we're talking about secret warrants. That you cannot find a Democrat, you can't find the ACLU, you can't find anyone on the left except for a few. You can find the people like Alan Dershowitz. You can find the Jonathan Turleys. You can find a lot of the people that are basically liberal Democrats, but constitutional law professors who look at what liberals used to be concerned with, civil liberties, and ask the question, what happened to the left in this country? We've said this before, that if you look at what the left has become in this country, what they promote is much more government control. And much more, as we've seen across the board, for example, when it comes to the Electoral College, when it comes to things like the Senate, where that's actually been brought up, that they don't wish to have a representative government that protects the minority from the tyranny of the majority. That everybody has become a victim, but on the other end of it, we are going to have a government that will be less responsive to the minority from the tyranny of the majority. And when it comes to government doing wrong things, when it comes to things that used to be so highly cherished from Democrats, and that's personal privacy, and that's the government not interfering in your business or not secretly spying on you, the Democrats and the liberals have just completely chucked that off as if it doesn't even exist anymore, because they don't like the guy that it seems to have been targeting.
Several years ago, we talked about Wyden and Udall. During the NSA thing, Wyden and Udall, two Democrats who wrote the Attorney General, the Justice Department, and had concerns with the FISA courts, saying that a particular FISA court judge had misinterpreted part of the Patriot Act, or at least the effective part of the Patriot Act that dealt with what Wyden and Udall saw as protecting people's privacy.
And that was going after the metadata of all the cell phones.
So when you have something like this, where are they?
Well, and remember, in that case, it was I forgot the gentleman who actually wrote that portion of the Patriot Act said, no, that portion of the Patriot Act was completely read wrong by the judge. I know, I wrote it.
Right.
It was meant to do the opposite. It was meant to ensure that things like the government surveilling every single cell phone, you know, in the country for metadata, that is an unconstitutional act, you know, did I say the FISA court doing it? Not the FISA court, but mm-hmm. but the government, the NSA doing it, mm-hmm. Is a violation of people's constitutional rights. The Patriot Act never authorized that. In fact, it did the opposite. It set the parameters of what you can actually do. And we did ask at that time, where are the Republicans
Republicans?
We asked that question.
They should have been on that letter or had their own letter issuing a concern with the Attorney General, the Justice Department, with the FISA courts, and that particular judge, again, misinterpreting that part of the Patriot Act. In something like this, where's the outcry? I mean, you see it from the right, but where are the Democrats who look at something like this? I suspect that if you do have a situation where the Attorney General starts moving and starts issuing any kind of warrants or doing a further investigation, and it becomes obvious, you're going to hear from those Democrats that want to separate themselves from it. Well, this is wrong. When it becomes obvious, when the Attorney General starts moving and maybe even handing out indictments on something like this, then you're going to have a number of them go, well, we didn't know what was going on, and we're, my gosh, this is, well, there's a lot of information right now that is known. A lot of information that is known. And where is that outrage? Instead, what do you have? You have the Democrats in unison saying that the president is still obstructing justice. This is what you have. So it's likely not going to change.
All right, I want to play that audio cut. I have it queued up again with Chris Wallace with Lindsey Graham.
Now from South Carolina, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator, President Trump, as we just reported, has given Attorney General Barr, quote, full and complete authority to get and declassify all government secrets related to the Russia investigation. Here is the president.
I declassified everything they want. I put it under the auspices of the Attorney General. He's going to be in charge of it.
Senator, any problem with that?
No, not at all from my point of view. I was one of the Republicans insisting that Mueller be allowed to do his job. I never thought it was a witch hunt. The Mueller report is in. No collusion. Mueller didn't do anything on obstruction. Now I'm insisting that we get to the bottom of this. I want all the documents around the FISA warrant application released. I want to find out exactly how the counterintelligence operation began. I think transparency is good for the American people. Not one Democrat seems to care. I was the hero when I said, let's support Mueller. I wish some Democrat would come forward to find out if the FISA court was defrauded by the FBI and the Department of Justice.
There you go. And that's the part that I want to, not one Democrat cares if the FBI or Department of Justice defrauded the FISA court. We're talking secret warrants here. Right. What in the world? You know, we talked about this when Antifa came out and you had a lot of Democrats supporting them. Well, I mean, they have some radical. We said, no, they're fascist.
Yep.
And we've talked about what has happened on college campuses today. We've talked about when conservatives wish to go on the campus. We've talked about that it's the Democrats that always wish to be stopping speech. They always wish to be stopping the free speech that they disagree with. They call it hate speech, and therefore hate speech must be stopped by the government. It's the Democrats that, and this is part of the discussion that I had over the weekend when we broke it down, and people were asking me, they said, you know, what happened to the Democrat Party? I had some Democrats, you know, that said, look, I used to vote Democrat. That's not even close to the party that I used to care about. A couple of them said, look, I hate Trump, but when it comes to civil liberties, Trump's civil liberties have to be protected like everybody else's, which, by the way, sounds like a liberal from 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. I may hate the person, but their civil liberties must be protected, because if theirs isn't, then the government can take mine away. And I'm thinking that's what the liberals used to say in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and even the 90s. And now it's completely and totally gone. They don't believe in the First Amendment. They wish to limit speech when it's speech that they disagree with. They don't believe in freedom of religion. We brought up a couple of cases with the Chick-fil-A at the airports earlier. They do not believe in the Second Amendment. They believe the Second Amendment is antiquated and should not exist. They don't believe in due process of the law. They don't believe in a presumption of innocence unless it's somebody that they like. And then when it comes to things like secret warrants, when it comes to illegal government surveillance, they seem to have no interest in it as long as it's focusing in on the opposition. We used to live in a country where people could go along with their partisan politics on the day-to-day issues, but what united the nation so much was in the individual civil liberties that the Constitution protects. That is the part. If you want the part of liberalism that is the most scary, look, the delusional things that they say, that'll all come out in the wash. They can sit there and try to pretend all day and try to convince you that a boy is a girl. Nobody's gonna buy it. Nobody buys it anywhere. They're going to try to say that nobody buys it. What scares me the most is where they don't seem to care, or they don't want to seem to protect civil liberties, and where they don't want to protect, where they don't even understand that the Constitution was set up, the Republic was set up, and the reason that the Electoral College is there, and the reason that the Senate is there, and each state gets two representatives in that legislative body. They don't seem to understand that the whole thing was set up to protect the minority from the tyranny of the majority. In fact, I think that they wish to have the tyranny of the majority because they don't view it's the tyranny, because they believe they're the majority and their majority should rule over everybody in the land. That, to me, is the most dangerous part of liberalism today.
I think we saw it play out during the whole Kavanaugh thing, especially when you had, you know, the confrontation with Jeff Flake in the elevator. We said then that is the empowerment they feel. If they believe they win by getting in your face, if they believe they win by disrupting the process itself, by throwing the process out the window, they believe they win. But it goes back to the late Ed Schultz. Do anything you can to win. Whatever you have to do, do it to win. When it comes to Donald Trump, there are no bounds. But it won't end with Trump. Because if it works here, it works against any political enemy. And if we can dismiss the process here, we can dismiss it anywhere. If we can abuse our power here, we can do it anywhere. And the process doesn't have a meaning anymore. There's only one process. Win. And you win at all costs.
But win what?
They believe they're winning. They right. believe they're winning everything if they get Trump out of office. By the way, that's not going to be the end of it.
By the way, I wasn't asking you the,
I know.
the question.
But, no, they believe. Yeah, yeah. Because what does this stem from? They had believed they had won the White House forever. During the Obama years, they went on and on. There may never be another Republican president.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, had you said in 2012 Trump will be president next? The laughter would have been nonstop up until Election Day, and it practically was during the 2016 yeah. election season.
Yep.
I mean, they just dismissed it as if, oh, please, this is a joke. They thought they had won everything forever, that the liberal ideology was going to rule. Now, first of all, we will point out, and we have several times, but it bears repeating, plenty of Republicans have moved further left. But what they do now is far beyond what they have done in the past. What they do now, disrupt the process, throw the process out the door. There will be no process. We're going to win.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up on the top of the hour. What might happen this week? And will the Attorney General be coming out with some of this declassified information, or might that still be down the road? We will get to that. Plus some of your calls and comments. A lot of people wanting to comment on the last thing that we were just talking about, and that's the fact that Lindsey Graham bringing up that the left doesn't care, the Democrats don't care about civil liberties anymore.
Right.
They don't care about whether there possibly was an abuse of secret warrants. And that, to me, is something. If you want to see the change in liberalism and in Democrats, that really probably is number one. And if you want to know something that really is fearful, because this is where, when we talk about Democrats, they're the ones that accuse the right of being fascist. But much more of that mindset of control outside of a democratic republic, the belief that the tyranny of the majority putting their will against the minority is okay. Because they believe that they're right, so they should rule everywhere. It is really, really incredible how far the left has gone and moved away from even caring about anything in the world of civil liberties anymore. It's really pretty amazing.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.